Coming up, Dr. Jason and Mira Kalton.
It's the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show with Jimmy Moore. And now, here's Jimmy.
And we kick off episode 530 of the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show with a fantastic conversation featuring a topic we really haven't covered before on this podcast. It is the subject of micronutrients. And we'll have that from Dr. Jason and Mira Kalton. Welcome back to the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show with Jimmy Moore. And today I am pleased to welcome a husband and wife team who have put together a really cool combination of ideas as it pertains to health in a brand new book called Naked Calories. And they are Jason Kalton and Mira Kalton. Jason is a fellow of the American Association of Integrative Medicine, a diplomat of the College of Clinical Nutrition, board certified in integrative health and sports nutrition, and one of only seven registered orthomolecular health practitioners in the U.S. We'll have to ask him what that is here in a minute. He has worked with thousands of international clients over the past 20 years to improve their health through nutritional and lifestyle therapies. Now, Mira is a licensed certified nutritionist, also a fellow of the American Association of Integrative Medicine, a diplomat of the College of Clinical Nutrition, certified personal fitness chef, and is board certified in integrative health. She has a diploma in comprehensive nutrition from Huntington College of Health Sciences, has just helped so many people understand nutrition, and in their new book, Naked Calories, How Micronutrients Can Maximize Weight Loss, Prevent Disease, and Enhance Your Life, they focus on something I really haven't had anybody on this show talk about before, and that is the micronutrients. So, Jason and Mira, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
I'm out of breath now talking all about who you are.
It's a long list there, I think.
Yeah, and you have a lot to contribute, and thank you so much for writing this book. It just came out the first of the year, but I really wanted to let people know about this as soon as possible. I've been talking to you, Mira, for over a year now. You've just been really excited about this book that you and Jason have put together. And so I'm happy to share you guys today. Jason, why don't we start with you? Tell us a little bit about why you got interested in the subject of health and nutrition to begin with.
Well, I've been working in this field now for about 20 years. I used to own health clubs and have my own kind of nutrition firm where I did one-on-one clients for about 10 years. And really did live in that world that we're going to talk a lot about today, the micronutrient. But, you know, I started off with the macronutrient, or dealing with people, helping people to lose weight was my main focus, and experimenting with low carbohydrate dieting way back, 20 years ago, when that was kind of a taboo issue and not today. And so that's really how I got into what we're doing today. And I started to realize that as we put people on their programs, and as we recommended they, exercise more and eat certain foods and manipulate their carbs and their proteins and their fats, one of the key areas that a lot of people weren't talking about were the micronutrients. And when we were able to get these individuals on a micronutrient regime, we saw faster fat loss. We saw that their muscle tissue, a lot of times, we could gain muscle at a faster rate. They would sleep better. They'd have a better appetite. They'd be stronger in the gym. And just overall, their experience during their time with me on their programs were better. So that's how I got into the micronutrient therapy as well. And we've kind of combined those two. And we today, that's how we work with our clients. We put them on both.
How cool. Now, Mira, you have an interesting aspect to this story, because you yourself had some health issues that kind of forced you to really look at this from a personal standpoint. Tell us about it.
Well, I was initially the patient.
Right.
Yeah, I found out when I was 30 years old, I lived in Manhattan and I loved my life. I was a publicist and I was having a blast and I just started feeling bad and I couldn't really walk very well anymore. My back started aching and I blamed it on stilettos. And it was a lot more than stilettos. I went to see the doctor and I was told that I had advanced osteoporosis to the point of having the bone density of an 80-year-old woman.
Yikes.
Yeah, so that was very bad news, and they wanted to put me on all sorts of medications, and I decided that I wanted to find a more natural approach. I didn't want to be on things. The more research I did, the less I liked, you know, what I was finding out.
Yeah.
I decided to move to Florida, which luckily led me to meet Jason. I just, we met actually socially first, and when we started talking, I told him the little bit of research that I had been doing to, you know, about the micronutrients to help me to grow my bone back. And we started working together. And over, by the end of 2 years, we had completely reversed my condition 100%.
Wow.
And that gave me a lot of faith in the whole idea of becoming a nutritionist. So I decided to go back to school and to do that. And that's kind of are the reason for sharing this information, because I realized that if I can do this and save myself a whole lot of pain and reinvent my life as a healthier individual, that it's something that it's really worth sharing with a lot of other people.
You know, Mira, you're not untypical of the people who get involved in the health industry who are successful. I have talked to so many people who might have been classically trained as, say, a medical doctor or a nutritionist, but then something happened to their health that forced them to reexamine their conventional wisdom that they've been sharing with other people, and they discover it don't work.
Right. And when you find something that does work, it's really hard to shut up. I mean, you know, you really just want to tell everyone. And, you know, the more times, especially because I, you know, I have a lot of female friends and I get a lot of emails from other women that I meet along the way that are all going through the same condition. It's extremely prevalent. And none of the medications are very positive. So, you know, it's just a lot of information that we want to get out on the subject. And we realized it wasn't just osteoporosis. It was cancer, heart disease, you know, all these other diseases, including obesity and diabetes. And we found out they all have a root in micronutrient deficiencies.
Yeah. Now, Jason, earlier you mentioned that you dibble-dabbled in low-carb diets way back when you were looking at macronutrients helping people lose weight. What do you think low-carb diets are doing right, and what are they doing wrong?
Well, I personally don't think low-carb diets are doing anything wrong. I think there's a lot of, you know... Well, let's start at the beginning. What they're doing right? Well, they're getting the carbohydrate out of the equation, and I think that's a good first step, because so many of the foods that contribute to chronic disease and just ill health in general are carbohydrate-based. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying all carbohydrates are bad, but obviously the white refined sugar and the white refined flour and all those type of foods are all carbohydrate-based, and those are the foods that everybody, I think, pretty much across the board agrees that we shouldn't be eating very much of, or any of, really.
And they're devoid of micronutrients.
Well, yeah, those foods are stripped and devoid of micronutrients, you know, and they also have their base in carbohydrates. So I think, you know, a low carbohydrate dieter is really, you know, they're putting one foot in the right direction just by cutting those foods out. And of course, that helps to lower their carb intake. Mm-hmm. You know, I could go on all day about the low carb diet. I mean, my synopsis of the question, I guess, would be, I think that that's absolutely the right direction to be looking at for so many different things. And as far as what's wrong with it, you know, if I found anything wrong with it over, you know, the last 20 years working with clients, it would be, it's hard to sustain over the long term. And I think that, I think that's probably where most clients have a hard time. You know, they fall back on to kind of eating, you know, eating some of those bad foods, and they fall off the diet, and they need to realize that that's just a misstep. You know, they shouldn't let them, you know, let that get them down. They should get right back on track again. And I think that's the biggest problem I've seen with clients, is over a period of time, they sometimes stumble and, you know, get addicted to that sugar again.
Now, Mira, do you think the reason for that is they're not possibly not eating enough fat in their diet, which would make the diet more satiating? I think that's one of the biggest mistakes I see people, you know, will say, oh, this low carb diet failed me. So I say, well, send me the menus that you're eating on your quote low carb end quote diet. And generally it'll be lean meats and all these things that decidedly are not low carb. They're just doing it the wrong way. So do you think that's the reason why most people fail? They just don't do it the right way?
Well, I'm actually the person who's usually the one designing the actual menu plan for the clients.
Yep.
And I can tell you, most people, when I tell them low carb, they think they can just eat the chicken breast.
Yeah.
And just cut things out. But you have to put things in. And that's what, like you said, a lot of people aren't realizing that the flavor is coming from the fat. I mean, the richness is coming from it, and that's how they're actually going to feel satisfied by their foods.
Right.
Also, people don't also realize that they should have a lot of flavor, and that these spices that you can add in are actually going to make it seem like it's a more traditional meal that they're used to. And I think people are really afraid of the kitchen.
Mm. Hear, hear on that one. I have really kind of fallen back in love with the kitchen myself here in the past year or so. Really trying to just put more focus on that. I think we get in a rut sometimes where we kind of get in the habit of living our life the way it is, and we forget, oh yeah, there are some better ways to do that.
And the problem is, the more often you eat the same foods, the more often those foods are delivering the same micronutrients.
Mm.
So if you limit the amount of foods to 7 things that you eat every single day, you're losing a huge spectrum of other health benefits that you could be receiving by varying your foods.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to jump in too and say that, you know, on that same question, if a low carb dieter, at least in my opinion, isn't eating enough fat, that can be a huge mistake. In fact, in my opinion, that's probably the biggest mistake made with low carb dieters.
Yes.
They have to get that fat way up, and that protein then, you know, doesn't have to be as much as a lot of people think. And one of the big myths that we find is people say, oh, a low carb diet, that means a high protein diet.
Right.
But in all reality, you know, I, at least with our clients, a low carb diet really means a high fat diet.
It always has meant that, Jason. It's just that the media, when they describe low carb, they always call it that low carb, high protein diet. And which is
right.
Why I love in places like Sweden and Norway and Finland, where low carb, high fat is so popular, they don't call it low carb per se. They call it LCHF. So there's no ambiguity that it's low carb, high fat. And,
right.
And you're exactly right. The missing element in an effective low carb lifestyle change is the fat. If you're not replacing the carbohydrates that you're taking out with more fat while moderating the protein intake, you're going to fail.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. Yep.
Well, let's talk about your book. Again, it's called Naked Calories, How Micronutrients Can Maximize Weight Loss, Prevent Disease, and Enhance Your Life. We'll have a link to it in the show notes section at thelivinlowcarbshow.com/show notes. There's also an accompanying website for it, caltonnutrition.com. And on there, you can find out all about the book and the great work that both Jason and Mira are doing there. But I got to tell you, when I saw the title of the book, guys, I've heard of empty calories, and I've heard of good calories, bad calories. But what the heck is this naked calories imagery all about?
Well, you know, we really love the idea. I mean, we actually kind of, you know, we started the idea with the empty calorie concept, you know, which is exactly what a naked calorie is in essence. But, you know, empty calories really didn't describe it the way we wanted to. You know, in today's world, I mean, the reality is sex sells. And so we wanted a kind of a sexy, catchy name. And that's where we came up with naked calories. I mean, that's what we're trying to say with it, is when foods are stripped of their micronutrient value, and again, stripped kind of lent itself to this name,
mm-hmm.
We end up with naked calories or empty calories. So, but we just love it. It's very catchy. And as soon as we started to use the name, everybody was like, that's a great name. And it just stuck all the way through the process of writing the book.
Well, and it's quite provocative to have the backside of a woman down to her waist, all naked.
Yeah.
Well, it is her backside at least.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. But it certainly conveys that notion, and perhaps it's kind of like my logo, Live in La Vida Low Carb. You know, it kind of catches your attention. Then hopefully once your attention is caught, you'll get into the nitty gritty of what that means. And I'm sure that's the same purpose that you're trying to convey here with naked calories.
Absolutely. And we also made the book a really easily read, fun book. It's all full color, and we added a lot of little stories and quizzes and such because we want people to enjoy the process of learning, yep. and we didn't want it to be too dry. So along with the cover, we kept them interested while they were inside, hopefully, as well.
Well, the pictures and the graphics and the graphs and the – I mean, I've never seen a book with so many of those things in it.
Well, great. I made them. I love that kind of thing. And I want people to feel like they're reading a magazine or feeling something they can really enjoy the process of reading. Some people like pictures better than words, and some people, you know, like the facts. So we really wanted it to be something that everyone could get something out of.
You know, growing up, you know, in the early grades, they always had books like this. But as you got older and got into college, it was all words. It's like, hey, I want some of those pictures again.
Yeah, well, you have to, you know, we love our publisher because that's really something that we had to fight for. We had to find a publisher that was willing to actually see our vision for the book. And we were really, really lucky that we found one.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the nitty gritty of micronutrient deficiency, because that's not something that you hear a lot about on a daily basis. You hear a lot about carbs and fat and protein and fiber and calories and all these things. But what is it about micronutrients? Obviously, there are micronutrients in most real whole foods that are out there, but people aren't eating foods for their micronutrients. Why is that?
Well, first, let's define for anybody who may not fully understand what a micronutrient is that we're talking about here. Mostly are your vitamins and minerals that everybody knows about, your vitamin A, B, C, D, and all those. We're also talking about our antioxidants, we're like quercetin and things like that, also CoQ10, yep. Vitamin-like factors, and our essential fatty acids, you know, our omega-3, our omega-6, you know, especially EPA and DHA. So we're talking about all those things that we see in the media all the time. And in reality, when we're sitting down or when we ask somebody, you know, how can you become healthy? And they say, well, you know, you need to eat better. What they're really meaning is we need to eat foods that are more full of these essential micronutrients. And so when we see things like, you know, grass-fed beef, well, why is that better for me than factory farm beef? Well, there's the obvious moral reasons of it, but what a lot of people don't consider are the micronutrient values of it. The same thing with pastured eggs or a wild caught fish. Those foods are more packed with micronutrients because they're more natural. And when we farm our foods and pick them before they're fresh and we ship them long distances, that process reduces the micronutrient content of food. And so in the book, we talk about how do we choose foods? We call them rich foods. How do we choose rich foods that are full of micronutrients and avoid or minimize as much as possible what we call poor foods or foods that have been stripped of their micronutrient value?
You know what would be really cool is if there was a website, and possibly you guys have already done this and I just haven't seen it yet, but there would be a website that would list foods according to their micronutrient content, give them some kind of a grade on a scale of 0 to 100. I've seen Joel Fuhrman do this with the vegetarian foods. And
only with the vegetarian. They don't include the fats in there.
That's
so
right.
It's a little misleading.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He does it to kind of bend it towards his angle. I would love to see that kind of a micronutrient scale so that people could see, oh, these are the foods I should be eating more of because they have the good micronutrients. And this one down here has only got 5. I need to not eat that quite so much.
Well, Jimmy, you're right on target here because our second book comes out in the summer. You're right on track. It's called Rich Food, Poor Food. And it's actually a grocery store manual that you'll be able to go in, and we're actually rating them based on only their nutrient values.
How cool.
So we're going to tell you which milk is the best kind of milk. We're going to tell you which kind of cheese you should be looking for. And we're not leaving out any of the categories. We're not telling you which macronutrients you're going to eat. We're saying, you know, there's good foods for low-carb dieters, just like, you know, there's some junk food for low-carb dieters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just because it comes in a box and stamped low-carb doesn't make it healthy.
Preach
and
it, sister.
For vegetarians.
Preach it, girl. Preach it.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah, I think far too many people, they poo-poo on these foods that are supposed to be better for you, like the grass-fed beef and the pastured eggs and the wild-caught fish that you talked about, Jason. And they say, well, they're so much more expensive. Surely I can get the same nutrition, and it's low-carb to get the better ones of those. But in the end, aren't we talking about nuances here? Aren't we talking about good, better, best? And while they may be good choices for low carb, is there a better and best out there? And yes, they are. And yes, they're worth every darn penny you can invest in them.
Absolutely. I mean, really, really, really. I think, you know, we've done a great job in America today of introducing people to these terms, you know, like we've talked about the local movement, the locavores, and we've talked about organic, and we talked about wild caught and all these great terms. But now we really need to focus on just how important it is to incorporate these into our everyday lifestyle. And, you know, from our perspective, from the micronutrient perspective, it's imperative and it should be our number one priority. You know, eating a low-carb lifestyle gets us halfway there, but, you know, it doesn't get us the whole way there. We have to make sure that we are, and these are two words that I want everybody to walk away from this interview with and really understand and really think about, and it's micronutrient sufficiency. We talk a lot about deficiency, but the answer to the question of how do I become healthy, how do I actually create an optimal lifestyle, it's to create micronutrient sufficiency. So we need half of that equation is how do I manipulate those macronutrients? How do I find a diet that's going to be realistic and sustainable and healthy for me? But then we need to figure out how am I going to create micronutrient sufficiency on top of it? And what that will do is that will protect us from that high blood pressure. That'll protect us from cancer, certain cancers. That'll protect us from heart disease. And this is backed up in study after study, thousands of peer-reviewed studies from some of the top places around the world show. I mean, I'm sure you've heard of all the great studies that are being done on vitamin D right now, and that it, you know, being sufficient in vitamin D could protect us from this, that, and the other thing. The same thing holds true for calcium, obviously, with osteoporosis and chromium for diabetes, and you name it. Each one of those micronutrients can help to prevent or reverse what we call in America chronic diseases.
Yeah. I really love the analogy that you guys put in the chapters on the everyday micronutrient depletion, the EMDs, of the bank account, because that's a good way to think of it. When you invest money and save money and put it into a bank account, it grows and you become a benefactor of that growth with interest and all this kind of stuff. But you talk about this everyday micronutrient depleters. Tell us a little more about that concept, because I found that really fascinating.
Well, you know, this was a concept that we wanted to talk about because I think a lot of times people, you know, we'll sit down with, you know, physicians and nutritionists, and the first thing they'll say is, well, you know, all you need to do to get all the vitamins and minerals you need is eat a healthy diet. Well, first off, that's never been proven. You know, I published a study in the International Journal of Sports Nutrition that showed that we looked at, you know, all different kinds of diets, and yet we've never been able to find a diet that is sufficient in the 27 essential micronutrients that we studied. But everyday micronutrient depleters adds another layer to that argument, because whether or not we can get all the vitamins and minerals we need from a healthy diet, what we forget to factor in are these EMDs, or these everyday micronutrient depleters. So we forget that, well, while there may be 250 milligrams of calcium in spinach, because of oxalic acid, we only absorb 25 of it. So we've got to do our math there. If we're exercising, you know, 45 minutes or an hour a day, we better calculate for the micronutrients that are depleted during exercise. If we're taking a prescription drug or over-the-counter medication, did we calculate for that? What about drinking coffee and perhaps some of the micronutrients that could be depleted from drinking things like coffee or alcohol? Do we enjoy wine or beer? So these are all these micronutrient depleters. We go through it in the book, and we talk about two different classes, both the micronutrient depleters that happen before we eat our food, and those, again, are things like traveling long distances for food. The longer food travels, the more it's exposed to light and oxygen. It's depleted. Cooking, we don't think about, you know, we watch Iron Chef on TV, but we don't think about what that chopping and cooking does to the micronutrients in the food. And then we also talk about those everyday micronutrient depleters that happen after we eat our food. And again, we touched on some of those, like exercise and others. Now, while we're big advocates of that, these everyday micronutrient depleters must be calculated in our equation as to whether or not we are sufficient in our micronutrients at the end of the day.
And there's a more than just a diet involved here. I was looking at the naked fact number 8 that you had regarding prescription and over-the-counter medications can deplete essential micronutrients, which can either exacerbate the same condition or initiate a new deficiency condition or disease. And I was immediately brought to mind of statin drugs, how they totally deplete your body of CoQ10.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, we have clients that, you know, their doctors are putting them on this, and yet the doctor knows. I mean, these things should come with warning labels that say, deplete you of CoQ10. And while they're really stressing that the person has to take their statin every day, how many doctors out there are really stressing the point that they better be taking their CoQ10 every single day because their situation is just going to get worse every time they take that medication?
You know what it is, Mira? Most people, you say CoQ10, their eyes go cross-eyed. They don't know what that is.
I know.
That's why your book's so important, because you're educating people about what these things are and why they're so important and why you need to know what they are.
I'll tell you, when we first started writing this book, our literary agent told us that we would never, ever be able to use the word micronutrient in the book because no one would know what it meant. And we have stuck to our guns on this, and we said, you know what, like Jason said, everyone needs to know the word.
Yeah.
It's an important word, and we're not going to just call them nutrients and confuse people with their macros and their micronutrients. We want people to understand what these things are.
How will people learn?
A bit of an education, but it's definitely worth it. Important.
How would people learn if you don't get it out there in the vernacular? I'm sure when Dr. Atkins came out in 1971 or 2 or whatever it was with his Diet Revolution book, I'm sure people had never heard of what a carbohydrate was at that time.
Absolutely. It's very much the same thing, you know. And like Mira said, we believe that people in America and actually throughout the world, because, you know, internationally, we believe people are intelligent enough to understand it. It's one of the reasons why we wrote the book in the way that we did. I mean, the book is full and it's heavy when it comes to content, and it's got a lot of information in there, but we tried to do it in a way that people will understand. And you know what? We're just going to talk to you like we would talk to our family members. I'm not going to, you know, dumb it down, which is exactly what they wanted us to do. How are we going to explain how important micronutrient sufficiency is if we don't use the word? And so anyway, we stayed with it, and I think it's been very successful. People have come up to us and said, you know, thank you for finally explaining what this really is.
Mm. Now, you're not just kind of doing this pie in the sky. You actually have done some research on this and looked at the micronutrient deficiency that's in a lot of the popular diet plans. Chapter 7 is The Balanced Diet, Fact or Fiction? And it examines the various popular diets that are out there. I got to tell you guys, balanced diet, if there's any term in America that drives me more nuts in the world of nutrition and health, that's it. Oh, you just need to eat a more healthy, balanced diet. It just drives me nuts, because what is truly balanced about a lot of the diets that are out there that you highlight in the book?
Right. Well, that's the thing. That's what really spurred me on to do this research study is, you know, the same thing holds true when they say it's a healthy diet. I mean, those two go hand in hand. Define for me a healthy diet. Define for me a balanced diet. You know, my definition of it came down to, you know, the micronutrient value. Well, a lot of people, again, over the last 20 years have thought, you know, oh, does balance mean, you know, 40-30-30? I mean, or, you know, they're thinking in that macronutrient term. A balanced diet, you know, obviously we have to balance our calories. You can't just go out there and just eat as many calories as you want to. You know, 10,000 calories a day isn't going to cut it. But what we're really talking about when we talk about a healthy or balanced diet, or at least in my vocabulary, is a diet that creates as close as possible to the micronutrient sufficient state. Did I get all the C I need? Did I get the zinc I need? Did I get the calcium I need? Are my foods working towards that micronutrient sufficient state? And when we looked at popular diets, we looked at the Atkins diet, we looked at the Best Life diet, we looked at the DASH diet, which is, you know, very popular for lowering blood pressure. We looked at the South Beach diet, and we took menus from their exact text, and then we looked and calculated the micronutrient value in the foods that they suggested people to eat right down to the last gram. And, you know, I don't know if you want to talk about how many calories it actually takes to be micronutrient sufficient, but I don't necessarily want to ruin that surprise for the reader. But I can tell you, none of those diets come anywhere near micronutrient sufficiency.
Right. Yeah, it was quite shocking looking at that number of calories needed in the four popular diets to achieve 100% RDI sufficiency. I couldn't eat that much in a week.
Right. Or should we?
Yeah. Nor should you, exactly.
But that's how they would define the balanced diet. You'd have to eat that many. And no one, you know, that's obviously not healthy for anyone.
So this all begs the question, what are the unintended consequences of not getting your daily appropriation of the micronutrients?
Well, you know, we could go on forever about that. The short answer is ill health. The reason why they're called essential micronutrients is because if we have a deficiency in them, the body can't function properly. You know, most of us function on a day-to-day level with slight deficiencies in most of the micronutrients. I think Dr. Oz came out and said that in a study of 3 million people, 99% of Americans are micronutrient deficient in their vitamins and minerals. And so, and we also have studies in the book from the FDA showing the exact same thing, these type of deficiencies. Now, they may not be so much so that you're going to get a deficiency disease like scurvy. Maybe you're not so deficient in vitamin C that you're going to get scurvy, but these slight deficiencies over time create holes in your health. Small holes create small problems. Maybe it's you're starting to get a headache. Maybe you're not sleeping so well anymore. Maybe you're starting to get depressed. Maybe you're starting to notice that you have cravings for foods that really don't make a lot of sense. Maybe your nails aren't growing so well, or your hair isn't as healthy as it should be. But then for other micronutrients, we may start to have large deficiencies, and those start to create large holes in our health. And over a period of time, they create what we know today as chronic diseases. So, for instance, Mira had a deficiency in calcium, along with probably vitamin D and K and some of the other accessory micronutrients that are known to help to promote bone health. And that took place over a long enough period of time for her that she got osteoporosis by the age of 30, which is very unusual. For some people, they may have a deficiency in calcium, magnesium, and potassium, which is what the DASH diet shows causes and or can reverse hypertension or high blood pressure. Maybe it's heart disease with a CoQ10 deficiency. We talked about chromium. Maybe you're deficient in chromium, and that could lead to a diabetic issue. And each one of those micronutrients, a deficiency in one of those can convert into a chronic disease and even a different chronic disease in each person. So instead of trying to say, you know, well, I got to make sure I get enough CoQ10, or I got to make sure I get enough C, or got to make sure I get enough calcium, or running out and buying this and really focusing on what I'm deficient in, we do try to focus on just being sufficient in everything across the board. And when you do that, then over time, you'll be living a very, very healthy life.
Mm. Now, you mentioned a term in the book that some people will probably go, huh? I've never seen that before. It's nutrivore. I guess it's kind of a mash of two words that we would know. Tell us a little more about what a nutrivore is.
Well, a nutrivore is any person who's going to follow our principles of creating health through micronutrient sufficiency. But unlike a lot of other programs that say you can only be nutrient rich if you're a vegan, or you can only be nutrient rich if you're, you know, whatever their belief system is. Mm-hmm. We believe that the grocery stores will make better food, will supply us with better foods. The farmers will be able to charge less. If all of these groups can all come together for the most important thing, which is nutrient-dense food. So our theory is that, you know, if you're a vegetarian, eat local vegetarian, locally grown produce. If you're a low-carb dieter, you know, try to choose things that aren't loaded with nitrates and try to find that grass-fed beef. And all we're saying is that we want to get all of these groups to have one voice that can actually come together instead of fighting each other always, and come together and try to get a better supply system and really pay attention to the most important thing, which is the micronutrients.
Mm.
It's really our stab at the unification of the diet profiles. You know, you put a low-carb person and a vegetarian or a vegan in the same room, and you better come back with Band-Aids because it can get very heated in there, you know?
Oh, trust me, I know.
And so we tried to, we realized after our research that this umbrella of micronutrient sufficiency is kind of common for all diet profiles. I mean, all of us can stand under this umbrella and say, whatever diet profile I've chosen for myself, I know that being micronutrient sufficient is going to help me. It doesn't matter if I'm vegetarian, vegan, low carb, paleo, Mediterranean, you know, low fat, you name it. We're all after that same thing, micronutrient sufficiency. So a nutrivore was a term we kind of tried to coin as a person, no matter what profile you're coming from, we can all agree on this one thing. And it's a good starting point for that unification.
Yeah. Now you had an interesting, story in the chapter about supplementation, chapter 9, the ABCs of optimal supplementation, a recipe for success, about the whisking an egg. Tell us about that, because I was sitting there going, huh?
Well, you know, when I became a certified personal fitness chef, and one of the things that we did while we were traveling, we went on the Carlton Project. So we went all over the world for 6 years to over 100 countries to try to study micronutrients. And being a fitness chef and loving food, I wanted to take as many classes with all different types of teachers as humanly possible. And one thing you learn is that it's never as simple as it tastes. Things are really far more difficult than you think. And whisking an egg is totally one of them. And whisking an egg, there's all these things you can't do. You can't do it on a humid day. You can't do it in a plastic bowl. And the whole point is that something that looks so simple, like the egg, that you would think is just a white and a yolk and it should be easy to whisk and make whatever you want to make, is really far more complicated. And that's really the truth about a multivitamin or your vitamins in general. You think you're just popping this really simple thing into your mouth and that you have absolutely no idea until you really start studying it, all of the different elements in there and how many different things in there are competing and having synergies. And it's really just an incredibly complex thing.
Yeah, you tell the history of how the multivitamin was created. And I think my favorite part was the little box where you had what fillers and sugars are hiding in your vitamin pill. And I know a lot of people listening to this show, myself included, take a lot of vitamins and holy crap.
Yeah.
There's a lot of junk in vitamin pills.
We absolutely. You know, one of the things that we wanted to do in this book is tell that history of the multivitamin. I've thousands and thousands of clients down the road now over the last, you know, 20 years of working with them. And I can tell you, I don't think a single one, when I've asked them, what do you think the history of the multivitamin is, has ever just said, you know, regurgitated that story to me? Never. They're always kind of like, I don't know. I guess it was invented maybe when my grandparents were alive, or it's always been here, kind of. We've never sat down and had that story dictated to us. So we wanted to make sure that was in there and how it came about. And when micronutrients or vitamins were discovered. I mean, it was really only the 1930s that we discovered all of the vitamins. And so it shouldn't be any surprise, really, that we haven't quite figured out how they work together, or we're just starting now to really fully understand, as Mira talked about, the competitions and the synergies that take place within the micronutrient families. So to touch it a little bit on micronutrient competition, it's one of probably the most misunderstood thing about a multivitamin is that it's today formulated almost the exact same way the original prototype was back in the 1930s. They just take the vitamins and minerals and all those other accessory nutrients and throw them together in a pill or capsule. And then they sell it to you and they say, there it is. You can see it all there. It's got it listed on the label. We've got X amount of this and 2000% of that and 5% of this. And it's all convenient for you to take in a pill, or nowadays maybe 2, 3, 4 or up to 7 pills, depending on what kind of potency you're looking at.
Right.
And we just pop it in our mouths and we think that it's going to do its job. But what we don't understand is that certain micronutrients, certain vitamins and minerals work together synergistically. We've heard about some of these in marketing, but others, almost 90% of the different vitamins and minerals that are found in a typical daily multivitamin pill compete with each other in a variety of different ways. And one of those, the major way, is through a receptor site competition.
Can you give some examples of that so people who are listening who might be taking those simultaneously at the same time can know what they're doing?
Sure. I mean, let's see. Well, A and D, that's one of them. Vitamins A and D, they compete for receptor sites. Now, a lot of times when we take cod liver oil, we're always wondering how, you know, with the high amounts of A and D in this, in the liver, how come it doesn't create a toxic effect? That's because these two micronutrients are competing for the same receptor site, and they have it's nature's safety net in a way, these micronutrient competitions. And that's great for food. But it's not so great for our multivitamin. You know, when you're trying to create micronutrient sufficiency, the objective is we want to take in just what we need, and we want whatever it is that we're taking in, that vitamin A or that vitamin C or that D, to be able to be absorbed. And that absorption process is stinted quite a bit by micronutrient competition.
Yeah. Now, one of my former podcast guests is the big low-fat diet guy, Dr. Dean Ornish. And I distinctly recall him saying something along the lines of, well, if a food is rich, then you probably don't need to be eating it. But that runs quite backwards to the Calton theory. I'm looking in the back of the book, The Hypothesis of Health, where step one is choose rich food.
Oh, yes. I mean, you know, when we're saying rich food, our definition is rich in micronutrients. And that's very, very important. I mean, one of the things we introduced in this book is, you know, the micronutrient sufficiency hypothesis of health. And it basically states that if a condition or disease can be directly linked to a micronutrient deficiency, then it can be prevented and or reversed through sustained sufficiency of the deficient micronutrient or micronutrients. And that's really the message behind Naked Calories, is micronutrient deficiency is really at the center of so many of today's chronic diseases and our feeling, you know, and obesity, which we talk about in this book, which is obviously a huge issue in America. We're always wondering, why is it that we constantly or can't even seem to slow down or reverse obesity? It's just another one of those chronic diseases that's associated with that micronutrient deficiency. And if a condition is caused by that, then it would only stand to reason that creating a micronutrient sufficient state would then be able to prevent or reverse it. And that's, you know, that's what we want to kind of leave people with when they get done with Naked Calories, is it's not, you know, when you get to about chapter 5, 6, or 7, people start to say, wow, you know, I hope you're going to give me the answer to this big problem. And really the answer to the problem, you know, it comes down in that hypothesis that you just stated, is that, you know, becoming micronutrient sufficient is the key to optimal health.
Yeah. Their names are Jason and Mira Calton. The name of their book is Naked Calories, How Micronutrients Can Maximize Weight Loss, Prevent Disease, and Enhance Your Life. Again, we'll have a link to the book in the show notes section at theliveinlowcarbshow.com/show notes. Be sure to visit their two websites, CaltonNutrition.com and NakedCaleriesBook.com. Now, Jason, earlier you mentioned that Dr. Oz talked about micronutrients quite a bit. Have they called you guys to come on the show to talk about your new book?
Yes. We've been very, very happy about that. According to the Dr. Oz people, they love Naked Calories and are working on a segment right now to be able to have us on the show and talk. You know, we don't know exactly what topic yet, but we've been big fans of Dr. Oz for a long time, and so we're looking forward to that.
That is so neat. That is so neat. Well, we'll be looking for that hopefully here in the next month or so. And thank you so much for being here today on the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show.
Oh, we appreciate you having us. Thank you so much for all of your hard work that you do.
Yes, thank you.
Coming up next time on the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show, we'll have my buddy Sean Croxton talking about his brand new ebook, The Dark Side of Fat Loss.
Visit our website at thelivinlowcarbshow.com/show notes. And email us anytime at llvlcshow@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.